The place.
Oneofus.net.
The date.
June 28th.
The time.
All of it.
Wait, what?
That's right, on June 28th, starting at 12 noon, we'll be broadcasting for 12 hours. It's our first ever Oneofus.net Comic-Con Podathon fundraiser!
12 hours? We didn't agree to...
There will be special guests, prizes, and several of your favorite site personalities pushed to the edges of their sanity when geek inebriation meets sleep deprivation.
Funds received will go towards a One of Us meetup during Comic-Con, as well as an end-of-summer bash in celebration of our one-year anniversary.
I'm glad you've come around.
Well, what the hell else am I going to do all day?
That's the spirit.
Join us, won't you?
Star Pierce Brosnan or Guy Pierce, and you still expect me to watch it?
Well, you have to by law because you live in Austin, Texas.
By law.
We love Korean directors here.
That's true. I mean, Korean directors usually just reveal to us the absolute worst of humanity and then beat it to death with a hammer.
True. But yeah. In this particular case, this Korean director, who is known for making The Host, what is it?
Bong Joon-ho
has made an entire movie in English with big American stars.
What?
So there's no beating in the head with a hammer in this one.
That is too bad, but it has a lot of good points as well. This is the highly suspect review of Snowpiercer. I am Brian.
I am Chris.
I'm Richard.
And I'm Ed.
Hey, we got a full house here.
Hey!
Hey, I'm starting to use my NPR radio voice.
Please
for no reason whatsoever.
Don't do that.
I'm Michelle Norris.
This is not an appropriate film for an
NPR
radio voice.
No, it is not. It is not a quiet, pensive film. It is a loud, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic epic.
You know, the thing about this movie is that on the outside, when you look at what it's actually about, Josh... You go, that's pretty silly.
Yeah.
You know, it's post-apocalyptic because humanity tried to solve global warming by seeding our clouds with some new chemical, which caused not just the ice age, but the, like, everything fucking dies ice age.
I mean, imagine the Polar Express meets Mad Max. Yeah. Basically, that's what you've got going on here.
And there's a train that for 17 years, I think they said it was, has been traversing the globe because some crazy inventor had the foresight to think that something like this might happen. So he made this completely self-sustained train that can keep going because I guess it's science somewhere. But
engineering.
Don't worry about it.
Quality engineering.
Don't worry about it. It's not important because ultimately this film is not about that degree of science. It's one of those movies that you can take as a giant allegory for everything that's going on in our world, and it does it quite well at that. Or you can just have fucking fun watching a post-apocalyptic film on a train. And it does that even better. As Chris Evans and a series of people who look like Richard covered with dirt try fight their way from the back of the train where all the poor people live up towards the front to try and meet the creator of the train and take it over in a battle between good and evil and poor and rich and what have you, with lots of really fun surprises.
I find it a little bit ironic that it's the American that has to save the day in this film, despite the fact that putting the prejudice against classes in the back of things is an American construct. Like, if you think about it, like, the buses in Georgia in the 60s were putting black people in the back because they basically looked at them as second-class citizens, and yet it's an American that comes to save the day when the world puts poor people in the back of the train. That to me is a little bit ironic.
But we're Americans. Eventually we come around.
Well, not only Americans, but Captain America has to fucking save humanity.
True. It was interesting because some of us, anyway, Richard and I and Ed, got to see this at a Rolling Road Show event, which is where the Alamo Drafthouse takes you out to a specialty location and shows it to you outside. And they brought us out there on a train, which was fun, if not a bit long. And then the actual director was there for Q&A and was asked, so was it a little weird? You know, I mean, you had Captain America there in this movie where maybe if you're looking at that as meaningful, that changes something in the context of the metaphor of the film. And also, he was supposed to be starving.
Yeah.
That dude is huge. He's like, yeah, I totally had to cover him with shit just to hide the fact that he's like the biggest dude you know.
So before we move off the Rolling Roadshow thing, I found this to be fascinating as well, is that, you know, like you got on, you touched on a little bit, it's a class struggle thing going on in this film, and the folks in the back of the train who are kind of our heroes
are underdogs.
Like, they've eaten nothing but these protein bar things their the whole life on the train.
Yeah, little black, gooey, gelatinized.
Yeah, these little gelatin brick things, right? Well, on the train ride up to this event, I wasn't there as press, so I was in a regular seat, and a Draft House employee came by and said, "Would you like a protein bar?" and handed me a tray of these bizarre-looking, like, gelatinous cubes, which I ate and were disgusting. Yeah. And my friend who was texting me, who was part of the press, was like, "Oh, I'm in a car that's getting served sushi, and, like, we're drinking and having sushi." I was like, "Oh my gosh, the Draft House are such geniuses that they did like a class warfare thing
they
to
took
us
that shit to
on
the, next
the way
level.
To the movie." And we didn't even know what was going on.
If it makes you feel better, they brought that forward to us if we wanted to try it too.
Oh, okay.
But we also,
I liked it.
No, you didn't.
I had three pieces.
That's because the cuisine of your native land is awful.
Yeah, you have haggis is your delicacy.
Well, one of the major things is that about the train in the film is that, you know, the people at the back are the ones who've survived the 17 years. And there's an abnormally large number of Scottish people at the back. I did notice this. And, like, even amongst the people of the British Isles, Scottish cuisine can be a little bit of a developed taste.
Mm,
and it's generally boiled, fried, then put into a case, boiled, fried, battered, and fried again.
I will quote Mike Myers and say that I'm pretty sure all Scottish cuisine is based on a dare.
Oh, how dare you say that about haggis?
Hey, they did invent the fried Mars bar, so, you know.
Good on you, Scotland. Next,
so, that's us.
Good on you. Good on you. So, yeah, now that we've talked about what this movie is and how we experienced watching it, what did we actually think of it?
You know, what ultimately sells this movie is the fact that it's very – it's filled with really unexpected sequences throughout it. Moments that just take you aback. The same way the characters are taken aback, as they don't really know what to expect as they're traveling through this train. They've never been past their car with this elaborate plan they've developed to be able to push through and try and force their way to the front of the train. There's so many weird things waiting for them along the way, and even amongst those sequences, there's just these moments of anachronistic absurdity. Like, there's a sequence where there's a huge axe fight between them and all these, like, masked guards.
Oh my god, amazing.
And they stop it in the middle when all the guards suddenly start counting down. And everyone's like, what the fuck is happening? You think, is it like the big badass about to show up? Is a bomb going to go off? But no, it's New Year's Eve. And the poor guys don't know that. But the rich guys do. They're like, hey, happy New Year's! Like, wow, that was weird.
Wait, I thought they were counting down to the tunnel.
The tunnel is marking. Yeah. They mark New Year's as when they get to the tunnel.
Oh, I see. I read that scene as, you know, everybody else in the train was celebrating New Year's, but they were counting down to the point where they were going to have the advantage because they also, like, part of their rubber suits is that they have night vision goggles and none of the poor people do.
Well, that happens right after that.
Right, which is what I thought they were actually, the rest of the train is counting down to New Year's Eve, but they are counting down to the moment, which I think is what makes it such an interesting juxtaposition, is they're actually counting down to the moment when they know they're going to be able to slaughter all of these usurpers, these uprisers, because as soon as they go through that tunnel, they're going to switch the night vision on and just kill
which
everybody.
Which is, as they yell out Happy New Year's, it's the ultimate New Year's Eve party for bad dudes in black masks.
But what's important here is that, yes, there is a night vision giant axe fight.
Yes, that is the important thing to take away from this. Yes.
And that's, well, there's a phenomenally absurd scene with Allison Pill as a school teacher. It's like, after all this violence, all this blood, they walk into a car that's looks like an elementary school filled with kids reciting like state mandated propaganda with a really, like, it's very Terry Gilliam-esque.
And we have the weirdest thing of all, which is Tilda Swinton as basically a psychotic, and even more psychotic, I have to stress, even more psychotic version of Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah.
She is the minister who has made it out of the cattle car at the back, has made up and is now within the thrall of power. But her job is to go back and keep the working classes back in their place.
And I'm not convinced.
She's like, I've held on to this degree of power. Swinton buries everything that you think about her as kind of like weirdly glacial, and why did Peter Jackson never cast her as an elf, and you know, all the great stuff that she does where you have this kind of otherworldliness about her. And she's lumpen and slovenly and has false teeth and is like this weird bun haircut.
It's so weird.
And she's hilarious.
Seeing her just after seeing her in Only Lovers Left Alive, where she's kind of like erotic and otherworldly.
See,
and
I was going to say, I was going to say that I'm not convinced she didn't think she was still in a Wes Anderson movie. Right. Like her character in Snowpiercer was like, Do you think you're in a Wes Anderson
They've
movie?
They've given
or
her
no?
weird teeth, and yeah. she's kind of like she has this kind of I don't. What is her accent?
It is a Yorkshire accent. It's a North of England accent.
Which isn't John Hurt, who's also in this movie, from Yorkshire?
No, John Hurt's from Derbyshire.
Okay.
Yeah. Now you bring up a good point, bringing up John Hurt, which is you realize his character's name is Gilliam.
Yeah,
that's
and
true.
So,
there was
I mean,
some influence.
Very, yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Somebody you put know, Brazil on a train and just let it go.
Well, right. Well, I think one of the things you touched on the fact that you know you can see you can view this movie as like entirely metaphor and just on the out exterior like that could be a pretty like sort of trite metaphor, like, oh, the whole world's on a train and there's poor in the back and rich in the front. But it's not trite at all. It's very like nuanced. Like everything happening in this movie, there's something going on. And yes, it's got that Korean crazy, like every new car is something nuts and crazy and new, but also there's just a lot going on. I mean, there's just a lot to think about with
it
this
keeps
movie.
Adding layers mm-hmm. to what to think about. And when I wasn't sure entirely how I felt about that allegory until we got to the end, mm-hmm. when it really, I mean, it's very, very dark situation that you never, the hero never would have pictured himself being in,
right.
that he puts him in that, puts the whole perspective of the class struggle into where even the audience is going, huh, I was kind of just hoping to see a just good guys versus bad guys movie, but you kind of are making me have to think about this a little.
Right, right.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's you can appreciate it on both levels. You can appreciate it as a social satire, not a satire, a social, like, reproach, a really, like, a finger wag to the way that we view caste systems and the way that we actually put such value on how much money we make, yada, yada, yada. Or you can just enjoy it as a balls-out sci-fi action Korean film. And one of my favorite things about it is actually the way that Chris Evans tries so hard to play an everyman. And he's really giving it his all. And you, for a couple of moments, believe it. And then you look over at him like, nah, you're still Chris Evans. I'm sorry. No.
Jamie Bell as well is kind of his little sidekick character who they actually find a way, like in every action movie, you get the hero and his sidekick. And they find a way to make his sidekick's arc make sense within the allegory even, and to actually be extremely impactful in the context of the film and its emotional content. It really does work, and he's never annoying, you know. And when we get to that point that we find out what their relationship is all about in the film, why they're friends, why he's so attached to him, what actually happened in the past, your jaw will fucking hit the floor and you'll go, oh, I forgot this was a Korean film.
Gut punch.
Yep.
And this is the thing. I mean, Chris Evans, you know, I think he's a very underrated actor anyway. This proves how underrated he is.
I agree.
Because this is a guy who by the time he gets to that pivotal scene, and he has this 3-minute speech where you will just go, holy hell, this is phenomenal. You forget that he's in a film with Tilda Swinton and John Hurt. You don't even think about them because you're just going, I just want to know where he's going as an actor with this. Now, you know, it makes sense that he's already said, you know, I've got my limited number of Captain American Avengers films, and then I'm going to go off and do stuff I want to do. And if it's going to be stuff like this, well, you take the money and you run, sir, because you have earned it, and you need to do more films like this.
Agreed.
Brave choice,
you know,
by him.
And you bring up a good point, too, of there are two very significant and lengthy monologues in the back, like the final act of this movie, and
you can just say the final car.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And never once was I upset about that was that a problem for me? Because we've been talking about this as like this kick-ass action movie, and it is that, but also there's like two very significant and lengthy monologues that are just like the gut punches that, you know, really make the script take the script to the next level.
And I like the fact that even after the curtain is pulled back, there is a lengthy and very tense sort of resolution to it. Like, man, that final scene where you're holding your breath the entire time, just hoping that Chris Evans is gonna survive this, because they do such a good job, and I'm not surprised, because this is something that Korean films do a lot of, building tension in a very small space, and they do it so well at the end of this film. Even after, you know, we can see all the strings and we know what's really going on, it still remains captivating.
Now, I would like to say, but, you know, as you are listening to us jizz all over this film, and it is well-deserved, there are some awkward moments throughout.
Sure.
And I think it's translation problems to some extent of, like maybe Korean ideas that don't necessarily translate to American audiences. One just really stood out to me, which is during the big axe fight sequence we referenced earlier. There's a moment where they bring out this huge fish right before it starts, and they cut it open with an axe, and they all dip their axes in it. And I was like, what, is that a puffer fish or something? Is it poisoned? What's happening? And we listened to the director actually explain it and go, oh, well, actually, I thought that up at the last minute, and it's kind of, I just thought it seemed tribal. And I was like, really? Because I just sat there going, why are they dipping their axes in this fish? It's really awkward. And I was like, wow, if the problem with the Weinsteins, they were cutting things out of the movie, that would have been the scene I probably would have cut.
Whereas I liked that. I thought that was a wonderful moment where they're just kind of like, they're going, this is what's going to happen to you. You are going to die, and we're going to enjoy doing it. Because for me, you've got to remember, the guards at that moment are the middle classes. They are the lower middle classes whose sole purpose in life is, because they know they may be able to curry a little bit of favor and get further up the train, but their real purpose is to make sure that the scum in the back don't supplant them, don't get past them. And that really is them going, look what we're going to do to you. And I liked that. That was one of my favorite visual moments of the film. Not least because...
Must be a Scottish thing.
Well, no, not least because that's the moment where you go, hang on, this is a sealed train.
Yeah.
Where do they get a fish from?
Well,
you find
that
out.
Question,
and I'm like, okay, that really was the first moment for me where you go, it's not just the back and the front. This is a progress. Something's going to happen in between here and
there. It's a closed ecosystem.
Really like that.
That fish really does add scale to the whole movie.
Oh.
You see, I could see Brian's face, and I know he
was
the second that came into his mind, and then I just saw him waiting.
I knew you guys weren't going to like it. I knew I was swimming upstream. But
usually when he works that hard, he just flounders.
That's true. Enough fish jokes. Finn. So,
you know, also, I've got to point out the Korean actors who are actually in this, whose names I don't remember, but I've seen them and stuff. I'm like,
well, they were both in The Host.
They're both in The Host. Are wonderful in this, where they're two
absolutely
drug addicts to this, like, toxic waste sludge that's manufactured to keep people addicted, which once again, of course, is a part of the bigger allegorical story about society as a whole. But the reason they break them out of where they're being held is because they're the guy in question is the one who knows how to operate all the doors. And their little arc during this is absolutely fascinating, just captivating to watch them work with each other. And as they, you start to understand what is their real motivation, and they're so good in this that I hope that this movie does well in America, so they get a chance to work more in America. They're really
well.
That
I mean,
good.
You're going to recognize the male actor from, if you watch any Korean film, you're going to recognize him from Thirst, from The Good, the Bad, and the Weird, from The Host.
The Good, the Bad, and the Weird was what I was thinking.
Memories of Murder, Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance. Like, this is the guy who is basically along with what's the name of the guy who's in the G.I. Joe movies?
Channing Tatum.
Yes, Channing Tatum. Along with Channing Tatum is the most popular Korean actor.
The Rock.
Yes, The Rock.
Charming Potato.
Yes, all of those people. Absolutely. What were we talking about? Oh, yeah.
Snowpiercer.
Well, Snowpiercer.
You never actually dropped the guy's name. You had...
I'm sorry. Yeah, it's because I got distracted by Charming Potato,
right,
which always seems to happen to me. That actor's name, by the way, is totally Kang Ho Song. Like I said, he's been in pretty much all of the best Korean films for the last 20 years. He's definitely one of the biggest stars in Korea who isn't named Channing Tatum.
An element of the film that I just think is so wonderful, too, is that this is not an American movie.
Yeah.
You guys were even saying, hey, you know, Chris Evans, there's still kind of an American guy leading the charge. But I think that the Korean lead is almost equally as important. It is clear that he's like...
There are moments where he steals the show, absolutely.
Right, but he's also... he has an entirely separate agenda from what Chris Evans is doing, and it's as important to the film as what Chris Evans' agenda is. But this is also just a very, like, multicultural cast, and it's like, we haven't even brought up the fact that Octavia Spencer's in this movie.
Okay, I was gonna say, and like, you spend 30 minutes thinking, oh, it's that girl from Community. That's the way her hair is. I was like, oh, she's the girl, I love her. It's like, oh shit, that was Octavia.
I can't count the reasons Chris is wrong.
But, you know, the thing is that Octavia Spencer, like, busts out a hammer and kills some dudes in this movie. Yeah. I mean, it's just like, you know,
check out the big hammer on old girl.
It's a Korean film. People, motherfuckers are going to get hit by a hammer.
Yeah,
she also has a great sight gag with an egg.
She does indeed.
There's a phenomenal sight gag with an egg, which made the entire place just burst into laughter because it's just such a beautiful tiny moment. And you're like, egg joke.
Absolutely. Well, fellas, I think we should go ahead and go into final thoughts. And I'm going to start with the Scotsman behind me because it's kind of terrifying me that I can't see you right now. So
he's got a hammer.
Oh, goodness. Richard, before you hit me with that hammer, hit me with some truth about this film.
I think this marks Bong Joon-ho, his arrival as a major director. I love The Host. I love A Mother, which is his follow-up to that.
Oh, love that too.
But it's kind of, honestly, for me, this is like watching Tarantino go from Reservoir Dogs to Pulp Fiction.
Agreed.
This is complicated. It is smart. It is unbelievably beautifully directed. He has an incredible eye, which really has come into its own. The cast is phenomenal. He pulls off the almost impossible challenge of having a cast speaking several different languages with different nuances, different textures, and making it feel truly international, which for a film which I think has incredible international appeal, but will still play really strongly in America, which isn't always true. I think this is just a masterpiece. I've got to say that word. I mean, and I don't feel I'm overstretching it. I think this is a great, great work of cinema. I think it's the best thing I've seen this year so far. Bar maybe competitive is Under the Skin. I just love this film. I'm going to do it.
Here it comes.
I'm going to go. It's 10 just wonderfully brilliant Korean films in a row with massive axe murder sequences out of 10.
Wow. Yeah. A perfect score.
He went there.
Ooh. We should have a sound effect, like a Mario power-up sound effect every time somebody gives a movie a perfect score. Mr. Travis.
Oh, man, how do you follow up Richard? I was also going to drop the M word and say, yeah, I genuinely believe this is a masterpiece.
We get in trouble when we drop the M word.
Yeah.
Some masterpiece is always trying to skate uphill.
You guys told me this was a safe place.
It is a safe place. Now come sit on my lap.
Yeah, I genuinely think of this as a masterpiece. I'm going to... The elements, like we've talked about, just kind of some of the things that stick out to me that we've already kind of touched on. I'm an action movie junkie, so I get my fix that way. And it's one of those things where you go, oh, this is like a movie that was made for me. Like, I just feel like this was just right up my alley, so I was predestined to like it on that level. But then, just like I said, the levels of allegory, like I even just heard someone saying something about it today that I hadn't even thought of, and that kind of blew my mind, and this is days later. So I know that this is a film that I can watch over and over again, and I'm going to keep, you know, just enjoying new layers. And there's giant axe fight.
How many films with a giant axe fight can you say? I'm going to keep finding nuance in this for years.
They're
to
mostly
come.
Korean.
It's true.
And you know, I'm especially a fan of the international cast and them all having something to do. You know, each character has something interesting going on and motivations. And so I'm going to drop. 9 out of 10 Koreans coming to America and succeeding wildly.
Everywhere around the world, they're coming to America today.
You just can't help yourself.
I can't help it.
Right. I welcome it, Brian.
Thank you very much. Today, I'm going to go ahead and say this. I love this movie, and as somebody who could probably... Jason Murphy said this to me the other day. When are you going to get your doctorate in Italian post-apocalyptic 80s films? And I said, you know, when I find a school that actually offers that, I will definitely seek it out. I love post-apocalyptic films probably more than any other genre, any other weird niche genre in cinema. And I think this is a really brilliant example of when you can do that, appease the action fans, give your characters interesting and well-balanced stories for the amount of actors, the sheer force of this cast, and balance everybody out so well. And yet at the same time, you know, really make people think, have beautiful cinematography and great action sequences. Like, this is everything coming together at once. The only, if I had a complaint at all with this film, it's just that there were certain points where I felt like the tonal shifts didn't quite come together the way that they needed to. It was very, like, and again, these are very brief moments, but there were a couple times where it tried to go from one thing to another, and I think it, if you pardon the pun, which you guys will never do, and that's fine, but I think it derailed what they were trying to do a little bit. That wasn't even the worst thing I've said tonight, so,
he's,
you know.
Been in the bar car before we got here.
Let's hold on to the booze until I, hold on to the booze hasn't always been my strong point. Anyway, the point being, I think this is a great film. I think this is absolutely Bong Joon-ho's best film.
Oh, yeah.
By a long shot. I'm going to give this 8 out of 10 polar bears who are laughing at us as they are enjoying the climates that we have created that has killed the rest of us because they are thriving.
Look, you guys, I can't say I disagree with anything any of you guys have said. I think that you guys listening, you're going to hear us raving about this. You're also going to go, but it's a post-apocalyptic movie on a train. Just, I'm sorry, it sounds silly. I believe you that it's good. And you will, regardless, spend the first 15 minutes of the movie with your arms a little bit crossed going,
I'm tired of this motherfucking apocalypse on this motherfucking train!
Or something similar. Going like, okay, I'm waiting for this to be everything they said it was. Because it does get to a little bit of a slow start. Takes a little while to get past the regular tropes of the post-apocalyptic thing. And you're still seeing the whole time going like, okay, I mean, this isn't bad, but where is it really going to go?
Well, and the Koreans cinematically aren't known for their brevity.
No. But it does very shortly really get going. And it will grab you, and it will make you care about these characters, and it'll make you care about the situation, and it'll make you really think in a fun way about what the allegory is. Not one of those like, oh, you're not going to get it unless you get the allegory. You're going to enjoy thinking about the ways in which they're actually talking about our society. I had so much fun on every level watching it on those two levels. This film, it's so endlessly creative throughout it. It has so many opportunities for just having fun in the midst of it, and then coming to such a serious and dark and profound place towards the end. It's really quite moving altogether. I believe he has indeed created an M word here. And, you know, I couldn't be more shocked considering the context. I am actually going to give this, despite its, like I said, getting off to a slow start and a few anachronistic moments along the way that didn't quite work for me, I'm still going to give it 9 out of 10 Chris Gasms sitting in Burnett, Texas on the grass next to Richard. Sorry about that, Richard. That's what the wetness was on your pants.
Knew that was the excuse.
Yep, sorry.
And to close us out, I'm going to quote one of the greatest beat poets of our generation. He's leaving on that midnight train of the apocalypse. Leaving on a midnight train.